Good afternoon, everybody. Please be seated. Our final case for today is case number 52946, SFPPLP versus City of Reno. Mr. Kerr for the appellant, Mr. Christensen for the respondent. Mr. Kerr.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael Kerr. I'm with the law firm of Mayor Brown, and my client is the pipeline company, SFPPLP. I would like to reserve 6 minutes of time for rebuttal. This case was filed in 2006. The plaintiff, my client, is a major interstate common carrier petroleum pipeline regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. Defendants, the City of Reno, which relocated SFPP's pipeline in connection with the Reno Retract Project. The city had sued the pipeline company in 2002. The parties settled that suit in 2003 on the basis that the pipeline company would pay up to a specified amount to relocate its pipeline, but could sue under Nevada Revised Statutes 350.569 and others, but this is the one that's left, for reimbursement of amounts it had paid for the relocation. And this is that reimbursement lawsuit. In the lower court, SFPP filed a written motion for summary judgment, which was denied by the trial court on only one ground, which was that SFPP was not a public utility within the meaning of NRS 350.569. That's the sole issue before this court. SFPP, in fact, is a public utility within the meaning of NRS 350.569. The statute that is now NRS 350.569 was passed by the legislature in 1967. Subsection 3 of that statute says that if a city is going to finance a project with bonds and that project makes necessary the removal and relocation of any public utilities, whether on private or public right-of-way or otherwise, the governing body shall reimburse the owner of such public utility facility for the expense of such removal and relocation. This provision in the statute serves an obvious public purpose of making sure that the ratepayers of public utilities do not have to foot the bill if the utility is required to relocate for a public works project that is funded by bonds. That is exactly what happened here. So if SFPP is a public utility, it is absolutely entitled to reimbursement under NRS 350.569.
Go ahead. I guess that's really the qualifying question in my mind. How is it that you are going to qualify your client as a public utility?
Under the normal definition of the word. In other words, it's our position, as taken in our briefs, that we told the court below, the district court, what we were, meaning that we're a interstate common carrier petroleum pipeline whose rates are regulated by the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and it is our belief that that qualifies us as a public utility. In other words, we do not have to, for example, be regulated by the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada in order to qualify as a public utilities under the statute, because the statute doesn't make any reference to the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada jurisdictional statute, which is in NRS 704.
Now, Mr. Kerr, if I follow up on that question, my understanding of your business, and I can say this is, I've seen the president, Richard Kinder, on TV and some of these business shows, and all I know he talks about Kinder Morgan is a toll road pipeline that doesn't produce gas, doesn't sell natural gas, just charges to transport it, like that. I don't, if that's true, I mean, that's what I kind of got out of the interviews, when I'm watching the general business news. So you don't produce natural gas or sell natural gas to anybody. You just transport it for other companies. Then. Is that correct?
That's basically correct, with one caveat, which is that it's not natural gas. Although you certainly have heard Mr. Kinder say that, I'm sure, because Kinder Morgan does have natural gas pipelines.
We have what, carbon dioxide? You have other things you transport?
This one, the one that goes through downtown Reno, Your Honor, is refined petroleum, which basically means gasoline and jet fuel.
Okay, so it's not natural gas.
It's not natural gas.
Okay.
But in fact, it was the trial court that found you were more like a Chapter 708 common carrier as opposed to a public utility, correct?
Well, that's a fundamental issue in which I think is a pure issue of law for the court, and that is there's no question, and we do not dispute, that we are a common carrier under NRS 708. I mean, that chapter is entitled Oil Pipelines, I believe, and that's what we are. And if you look at NRS 708, you'll see that the regulatory body that would regulate us, if we were an intrastate utility, is the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada. Commission is defined as the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada in NRS 708 as well. And in fact, you know, there are references to pipelines in NRS 704. This particular reference is not in our briefs, so I brought the book. NRS 704.280 is language that was added in 1963, as I understand. The commission may regulate the manner in which power, telephone, and telegraph lines, pipelines, and the tracks of any street, steam, or electric railroad or other common carrier cross or connect with any other such lines or common carriers. I mean, the Nevada Public Utilities Commission does regulate oil pipelines. It does not regulate the rates of Kinder Morgan's pipeline only because it's an interstate pipeline. That's the only reason. If we had point-to-point, we, SFPP, had point-to-point transportation within the state of Nevada, we would be regulated by the Public Utilities Commission of Nevada. And in fact, the pipeline company does have point-to-point transportation in, for example, California, and is regulated by the Public Utilities Commission of California.
Not here.
No, that's true. So if you know, I mean, if this court were to decide that an interstate common carrier pipeline, because it's interstate and not intrastate, is not a public utility, then this court, that would be this court's decision. But I don't think that there's any basis for that. We think specifically under 350.569 that the statute was just intended to be read generally, meaning that the definition of public utility was just the general, normal dictionary, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica, etc. definition of public utility.
So you dispute the fact that was found by the district court once again that in fact if the legislature had wanted to include you within that definition, they could have done so.
Well, that's actually a very interesting question. The city, in its brief, pointed out that in 1971, the legislature deleted the words property by pipeline from 704.020, which had been in there. I think that actually ends up cutting the other way, because those words, property by pipeline, had been in the statute, 704.020, the same one the district court relied on, since 1963, which means, among other things, that they were in there in 1967 when NRS 350.569 was passed. So, in other words, if the legislature sitting in 1967 had said to itself, what's the definition of a public utility under NRS 704, and had gone to the statute books in 1967 to look that up, they would have seen that it included, among other things, common carriers of property by pipeline. So, you know, in order to credit the city's argument, you have to assume that in 1971, when those words were taken out, that meant something in about 350.569, which we don't think it did. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time. You know, the bottom line is that we think that statute should be interpreted just according to the ordinary common understanding of the word public utility.
You have about 5 minutes and 45 seconds left for rebuttal. Mr. Christensen, on behalf of the respondent in this matter, City of Reno.
I could have brought along a copy of the statute. I hope you could see from the bench, but we'll find out shortly.
I didn't bring my, I'm nearsighted and I didn't bring my glasses. So,
you can bring it way up here if you want so that just as good as can see it.
Yeah, I think I got it.
I can see it. Justice Sada?
I'm just fine.
That's what happens when you have youth.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Donald Christensen on behalf of the City of Reno. The district court in this case correctly concluded that Kinder Morgan was not entitled to reimbursement under NRS 350.569 with respect to the $2.4 million that it voluntarily agreed to contribute towards the cost of relocating its own petroleum pipeline. That decision should be affirmed under accepted principles of statutory construction and with a view towards the public policy that the legislature was trying to accomplish with the statute. It was Kinder Morgan's burden to show all the elements that are required for it to recover under this statute. There's really four reasons that this court can look to as to why Kinder Morgan failed to carry that burden and why the district court judgment should be affirmed. The first is that the statute applies only where relocation is made necessary by the exercise of power of eminent domain. And in this case, it's undisputed that the city never exercised the power of eminent domain and never threatened to exercise the power of eminent domain. The second ground on which the court can be affirmed is that the statute was never intended to apply where the costs of relocation were incurred as a result of the enforcement of private contractual rights, such as occurred here where the city attempted to enforce its private easement rights against Kinder Morgan. The third ground for affirming the district court is that the statute excludes any obligation to reimburse where the cost of relocation has been considered to be a proper element of just compensation in any settlement or in any eminent domain proceeding. And the fourth ground, which you'd get to only if the first three have not already swayed this court to affirm the district court, is that simply Kinder Morgan, when you apply the statute, Kinder Morgan is not a public utility within the meaning of the statute. And since that was sort of the subject pretty much of the court's questions to begin with, why don't I address that fourth one that the district court relied on specifically in granting summary judgment to the city and against Kinder Morgan. Now, Kinder Morgan's, I guess, has two arguments here. First is that they believe that under this statute that the term public utility should have its, what they call, the ordinary meaning. Well, the problem is, this is probably one of the worst words in the English, not words, but terms in the English language, perhaps, to say that, because legislatures, different legislatures and different courts at different times in different states have all given different meanings to that term public utility.
And in fact, isn't it true that the district court in the footnote to his order said that this entire case, and I'm quoting, came down to the statutory meaning of that term referencing public utility?
Exactly, as specifically intended by the legislature in this specific statute under which reimbursement is sought. And in another footnote, the district court said, well, we've all been referring to this generally as utilities, but so I don't think anything you can say that the district court commented on in that regard, that sort of falls in line with its footnote. Exactly. Okay, thank you. Really, this court has the same task that the United States Supreme Court had in the Davies Warehouse case that I cited in our brief. And that was a case in which Congress referred to the term public utility as far as setting rate price increases on certain entities during the war, during World War II. And they didn't define the term there. And the court there said that use of that term, public utility, in a context of generality wears an appearance of precision which proves illusory when exact application becomes necessary. Relevant authorities and considerations are numerous and equivocal, and different plausible definitions result from a mere shift of emphasis. The problem is there is no agreed meaning to that particular term. And Kinder Morgan suggests their argument is, I think, twofold. One, let's use a dictionary definition. Well, okay, there's no legislative intent that anybody's found that says that's what the legislature intended to do here. But even if you look at their proffered definition, they've supplied us with several from different dictionaries at different times. The essential factors that come forward from those definitions are really three. One, to be a public utility, you have to provide an essential service to the public, you have to operate as a monopoly, and you have to be granted some special franchise. Well, Kinder Morgan has failed to provide facts to the district court, any evidence, that shows that it qualified under any one of those three factors. It doesn't provide essential services directly to the public. It doesn't provide heat or power, electricity, water directly to the public. It agrees it doesn't operate as a monopoly, and it's never shown that it's been granted any special franchise at all. So even if you use their dictionary definition, which we don't suggest necessarily that you do, they failed to present evidence to show that they fell within any of those definitions. Now, the other thing that they claim is that they should be called a public utility because they're regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Well, that statute that regulates them, 49 U.S.C. section 60502, simply says that the FERC has the duties and powers related to the establishment of a rate or charge for the transportation of oil by pipeline. It goes on from there. But nowhere in the statute by which FERC has jurisdiction over Kinder Morgan does it ever refer to it as a public utility or a utility, even in their own statute. And in fact, Kinder Morgan has never supplied this court with any definition under federal law that it's regulated by, nothing that says that calls it a public utility under federal law, no cases that even refer to it as a public utility. It just says that, well, we're regulated, our rates are regulated by the FERC, so therefore we should be a public utility. Well, the federal government also regulates rates to some extent for banks, regulates rates to some extent for credit cards. I mean, nobody ever thinks of a bank or a credit card company as a public utility. If you look back, I think the court's got to deal with somewhat the same questions I say that the United States Supreme Court dealt with in that Davies Warehouse. And the court there looked to the definition of public utility under the specific statute, the state statute, California statute, that defined that term under state law, even though there's no indication in the federal act that that's where you should look to specifically, that Congress has specifically intended. But that's what they did. We're suggesting that this court do the same thing here. And the way that you get there, one way, is you sort of have to ask yourself, why did the legislature enact this statute? Well, we're not totally in disagreement with Kinder Morgan on this. I mean, it's somewhat obvious from the statute, the terms of it, is that when there's a special project that a municipality engages in and it makes it necessary to relocate, that public utility facilities be relocated, who should bear that expense? The statute puts it directly onto the city. And as opposed to the ratepayers of what I would call real public utilities, the ones that real public utilities that provide essential services to the public, operate as a monopoly, and have some special franchise rights. Those are the sorts of ones that people commonly deal with, I think, all the time. Those are the ones that are really ratepayers of entities that are monopolies that supply those essential services that we all depend on, you know, the heat, the electricity, the water, those sorts of purveyors. And those are the public utilities that are defined in NRS 704.020 and excluded under .021. And that's the statute that the district court relied on. That's why the district court chose that one, because that's the one that's really addresses in Nevada what everyone really here considers public utilities. If you ask the man on the street, the essential services that we provide that we obtain from monopolies. And that we have a need here across the state, not just in this case, but this statute obviously applies to all municipalities across the state of Nevada. And here, it cost many millions of dollars to relocate this particular pipeline. I mean, this was a large project, but this can happen in other cities too. Other cities need to be able to assess in advance of engaging in any kind of a similar project what its obligations might be under this particular statute. And so we need some definition. We suggest that it's that signed by 704.020. Let me just touch then, if I can, on some of the other grounds that were discussed at various times in district court pleadings, not specifically in connection with this summary judgment motion, but as this court is aware, it can uphold the judgment of the district court on grounds not necessarily relied on by the district court, as long as the city is entitled to judgment as a matter of law with respect to these other factors. All these other factors really are addressed to the question of whether Kinder Morgan was entitled to recover under this statute, which is its sole claim for relief. That's what it pled. And so by doing so, it has to show completely that it was entitled to recover. Number one, it's our position that the statute only applies where relocation is made necessary by the exercise of power of eminent domain. The reason that that's our position is there's several reasons. One, the title itself indicates, makes reference to when the exercise of power of when the power of eminent domain is being exercised. Second, in the first two sections there, as you can see, the word necessary is used several times in connection expressly with the exercise of power of eminent domain or condemnation. In the third subsection, which is the reimbursement section, again, the word necessary is used. Ordinarily, when the same word is used in different parts of a statute, it's presumed to be used the same meaning throughout. If you also look then at the last clause there of subsection 3, where it refers to just compensation and eminent domain. I mean, just compensation is ordinarily understood to be a term of art which has to do with the obligation of a government to reimburse a private property owner when it takes money, or it takes property, excuse me, from them. And eminent domain is sort of self-evident. That's our point. It refers to just compensation, it refers to eminent domain, the same as the prior two sections. All of these, this entire statute is aimed only where eminent domain is exercised. And the importance of that argument here is that the city never exercised the power of eminent domain. It never threatened to exercise the power of eminent domain. It's undisputed. Kinder Morgan's argument is that because they asserted a counterclaim for inverse condemnation, that should bring them within this statute that applies only to eminent domain proceedings where eminent domain is used. But their counterclaim for inverse condemnation, the strongest factual allegation they could come up with against the city for a supposed taking, was that the city had requested Kinder Morgan to relocate its pipeline. And secondly, there was never any adjudication that an inverse condemnation had actually occurred. They dismissed this counterclaim. It was resolved by the settlement agreement.
Does the agreement that gave Kinder the reservation of rights to seek the reimbursement, does that have any meaning here at all?
It doesn't have any impact, other than it allowed them to bring this, to file their complaint, but all it did was allow them to seek reimbursement. That's what the settlement agreement expressly said. Once they're seeking, now you're within the terms of the statute itself, and they have to show that they can satisfy all the requirements of that statute before they're entitled to recover. Seeking is one thing, recovering is another, as we all know. This statute also, just in touching and briefly, all these are addressed in our brief, but we believe also the statute was never intended to apply where the cost of relocation were incurred as a result of the enforcement of private contractual rights. This is a case, the case that preceded this, the case that led to the settlement agreement, was a case where the city sought to enforce private easement rights that Union Pacific had against Kinder Morgan with respect to the location of their pipeline. The city had received an assignment from Union Pacific to attempt to do so. What this statute does, it changes the common law with respect to who's supposed to pay for relocation of public utility lines in a public right-of-way. And we think that was one of the purposes of this statute. But that rule was only applicable only when there was no private agreement that addressed that. So we think that's not even applicable for that reason here. The third reason also is, really, comes back to your question, Justice Cherry, with respect to what did the settlement agreement get them? Well, it got them the right to seek reimbursement. But the problem is, if you look at subsection 3, the last clause, again, I'm starting with the word except that I've underlined in red there, it expressly excludes any obligation to reimburse if the cost of relocation has been considered as an element of just compensation in any settlement agreement or in any eminent domain proceeding. Well, Kinder Morgan, by settling for $2.4 million, or if I agreed to contribute only $2.4 million, it was able to not have to pay any of the remaining cost of relocating. Under their easement agreement with New Pacific, their cost of relocation was to be borne completely by Kinder Morgan with respect to relocating within the right-of-way or within railroad property. So it ended up costing in the neighborhood of about $11 million. That's $8.5 million potentially that they saved by entering into the settlement agreement. The second thing they also received in the settlement agreement is they received substituted easement rights and other property that the city arranged out of the right-of-way of where the new train track was going to go. And that was a very valuable right because, by way of the agreement, paragraph 15 of the settlement agreement, Kinder Morgan was entitled to be reimbursed if they're ever required to relocate out of those. They're required to be reimbursed for all the expenses, as opposed to under their original easement agreement, they had to bear the entire burden. Those are the reasons we suggest that the district court was 100% right when it decided as it did. It picked the only definition of public utility that made any sense to use in the context of this case. The ones that are proposed by Kinder Morgan just don't make sense, and they're totally unusable when you're talking about a municipality trying to assess maybe what's going to cost maybe millions of dollars, whether it's got to account for that as part of a potential project. The other things that we've discussed is other reasons, additional reasons that the district court decision can be affirmed, and we'd ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Mr. Kerr, rebuttal. You have 5 minutes and 45 seconds. You could start off by commenting on my question. Just the fact that there was a reservation of rights to seek reimbursement, does that have any meaning in this particular litigation?
Well, it's the basis for the lawsuit, Your Honor.
I understand that, but I mean, does that weigh in favor of your client?
Well, it does, and I think that the district court got this part right. In fact, we think the district court got virtually everything right except the definition of public utility. The settlement agreement expressly carved out the right to seek reimbursement under these statutes. The only way that you can give meaning to Section 4 of the settlement agreement is to say that if we qualify as a public utility and otherwise qualify, we have a right to get reimbursement. That's what the settlement agreement means. That's what we told Judge Adams that it meant in open court on the day, which I think was March 17th, 2003, that we entered into the settlement agreement, which was later documented. In other words, this was a negotiated part of the settlement. It's clear from the record. I'm not just saying that based on my recollection. It's clear from the record this was a negotiated part of the settlement that we could sue under these statutes. And to interpret that section to mean that we can't is to read it out of the settlement agreement. I mean, I actually think that it's very clear. It says that we've reserved the right to reimbursement under 350.569.
Seek reimbursement.
Yes, well, that's right. But the court below found that that meant that we could bring the lawsuit. And I have to say that we're now in an area that was not the basis for the summary judgment. And I don't think that the summary judgment can be affirmed on that basis without sending it back because there was no factual elaboration of this issue. There was no factual elaboration of the contractual intent. I think perhaps the district court was a little surprised that the city did not.
Let me interrupt for a second because I suspect we might all agree with you on that particular issue. My concern is, going back to where I started, I need for you to fit your client within any definition of public utility that can be recognized either statutorily or under the broad definitions that you suggest.
Well, we did cite some cases in our brief, and I have some of them in my outline. As a sort of a general historical matter, my understanding is that in the early 20th century, Standard Oil and other companies like that were building pipelines in which they were only transporting their own petroleum, and they would refuse to give transportation to other companies, competing companies, for example, and they were proprietary. And there was a big push to make all these common carrier pipelines. And then there were cases that decided whether they were public utilities and common carrier pipelines. One of them is Producers Transportation Company versus Railroad Commission, 251 U.S. 228, which stated, that's the U.S. Supreme Court, there can be no doubt that the pipeline is a public utility and its owner a common carrier whose rates and practices are subject to public regulation. Another U.S. Supreme Court case, Marcus Brown Holding Company versus Feldman, 256 U.S. 170, 1921, discussing oil pipelines and other similar public utilities. I don't think there's any real question here that we're a common carrier. One of the things that we think has led to confusion in this case is the district court appeared to believe that common carriers and public utilities weren't the same thing, and we cited a number of authorities in our brief to the effect that they are the same thing, including something as fundamental as Webster's Third New International Dictionary, which the second definition of common carrier in Webster's is a public utility or public service company.
But you're not that. That's rather circular in your analysis, isn't it?
Well, we're a common carrier.
Undoubtedly. I don't dispute that.
What we are is a common carrier interstate pipeline. And I would also point out that the district court, on page 2 of its order, stated under facts and procedural history, Kinder Morgan is regulated as an interstate common carrier and public utility by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. So the issue of whether we were a federal public utility didn't seem to be something that the district court was disputing. It all seemed to go off on whether we qualified under NRS 704.020. And I will say another case that I wanted to make sure to bring to the court's attention in this portion of the argument, the argument that NRS 704.020 should be used to interpret the term public utility in a completely unrelated statute was directly rejected in the case of Ronow versus City of Las Vegas that we cite. It's directly contrary to Ronow, which is 57 Nevada 332, 1937 case in which this court held the definition of the term public utility given in what is now NRS 704.020 is confined to the particular classes of public utilities dealt with in the Public Service Commission Act as amended. Said definition is not applicable to the term public utility as used in the statutes heretofore quoted in this opinion. So we think that not only, you know, do we meet the common dictionary definition of public utility, but we meet the definition in 704.020, we believe, for reasons that are stated in our brief. And in addition to that, existing valid precedent of this court says you can't use the Public Utility Commission of Nevada's jurisdictional statute to interpret other statutes relating to the powers of the city. In fact, in that case, it was also the powers of the city. It was the powers of the City of Las Vegas. On the other arguments, unless you have questions about them, I'll rest on the statements in our brief.
Justice Sagan? Thank you. The panel would like to thank Mr. Kerr and Mr. Christensen for their top-notch arguments and briefs in this matter. Congratulations to both sides on this. Good lawyering on both sides. And this case will stand submitted.